Welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the podcast for landgrantholyland.com, your free resource for all things Ohio State news. I am your intrepid host, Matt Brown, and you can follow our site on the off chance that you are not already on all manner of various social medias. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/landgrantholyland. You can find us on Twitter at landgrant33. You can find me on Twitter at MattSBN. We're on Instagram, we're on Snapchat. Actually, I think there's a Pinterest account somewhere on the off chance that you use Pinterest for things other than recipes. And if you do, I don't know why, but if you do, there's Ohio State stuff on there, so be sure to give us a follow. We are recording this here on afternoon on Wednesday, and I am joined here by one of the finest minds in the Penn State community to help us get a little bit of a better understanding for what we should be expecting for the big game here this week and what's happened with Penn State's season. I am joined here by Ben Jones. Ben, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us.
Yeah, sure thing. That's probably the best introduction I've ever gotten. So I'm gonna when I write a book, I will put the one of the greatest minds in the Penn State community right on the back.
Yes. I mean, like, this podcast, right? This is not the heavy hitting Sunday morning talk show that we're bringing people on here. We bring people on, we'll get you comfortable. I'm not going to go stick Ohio State Twitter on you. We're just having a conversation. That's all.
Yeah, this is the pinnacle of higher learning and thought. So I'm going to take part.
We are leaders and legends and warrior poets. Since this is the Big Ten, after all, you know, I'll have you know I'm wearing a tweed jacket as we're talking.
So, well, I'm alcoholically drunk, writing just great thoughts as we speak. I'm not actually. I'm just kidding. But nevertheless,
yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Penn State, and we'll get to this football game here in a minute. But the first thing I wanted to ask you about is something that I've seen mentioned in a couple of different articles here from various Ohio State beat writers. And I guess I hadn't really thought about it until I actually checked the numbers and realized this was the case. But it appears that Penn State has not recruited very many players out of the state of Ohio in recent memory. I know that there's a blue chip player, I believe, in the class of 2017, and there's a gentleman currently, and I think in this coming class, from Dublin-Kaufman, which is just outside of Columbus. But over the past couple of years, it seems that Ohio State has been able to have better luck taking players out of Pennsylvania than Penn State has been able to take players out of Ohio, even Youngstown, which is like only really barely part of Ohio anyway. Do you think that this is something that might change in the near future? And do you think that if Penn State, does it even matter? I mean, if you're getting kids from New Jersey and Maryland and elsewhere, like, is it even a priority to go into Ohio?
That's a good question. I mean, I think to a certain extent, Penn State's primary recruiting area is always going to be to the east of campus, and that Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, Maryland area. You're going to run into a lot less opposition on the recruiting trail there. I think that's the biggest thing that Penn State's been able to do is, especially with everything that's gone on at Rutgers. Rutgers and Maryland have been the biggest obstacles, Syracuse at times, on the recruiting trail. And you go into Ohio, and it's pretty obvious what you're going to run into there. I mean, to try and take a guy away from, you know, the home state, take him away from a team that's just won a national title and you know, for the past 10 years has essentially been, you know, head and shoulders above Penn State in a lot of regards. That's just a tougher task. So I think when you look at the fact that, you know, there's talent everywhere and there's a lot of talent where Penn State can go and recruit a lot more effectively, I don't think there's any doubt that Penn State wants to recruit Ohio better because there is that talent there. And like Urban Meyer said earlier this week, I think it was this week, that, you know, they can't take everybody. There's just not, you know, there's more talent than there are rooms on the roster, or there's room on the roster. So, you know, Penn State's going to try and sweep in there, maybe win some recruiting battles, and then pick up what's ever left over. But I think for the most part, you know, James Franklin says, you know, we want to focus on Ohio, but at the same time, there's not a lot of reason to get away from the area in the country that's worked so well for them for all these years.
It makes a lot of sense, especially depending on where you're going in Ohio. I think that there's occasionally a perception that, you know, the entire state is completely impenetrable and, you know, Ohio State gets everybody that they want. I'm not sure if that's always the case in practice. There's a very large parochial school community in Cincinnati, and Notre Dame's had a lot of success there, and that's culturally, that's not always totally part of Ohio, and I think that's a little bit true. There's with Youngstown, and there's some other high quality high school football that's played, you know, near the Ohio Pennsylvania border, and there may be some people there with split allegiances. But if you're able to come into Hyattsville and go grab a kid out of Dematha or, you know, out of Baltimore, you know, why make the trip to Youngstown if you don't have to? It makes sense to me. I would certainly imagine then that the coaching change situation that's happening with Maryland could potentially have major implications on Penn State recruiting if they're able to actually plunk down $4 million and go get somebody to be more competitive in some of those battles.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things that fans look at that Maryland game and they look at the Rutgers game and they go, well, you know, that same way that Ohio State fans say that Penn State's not a rival is sort of the Penn State fans reflect that onto Maryland and Rutgers, but really... especially since those two programs joined the Big Ten, to go out and beat them on the field is one of those things that just sort of keep the status quo as everybody expects it to be. So I think, you know, while fans don't like saying that it's a big game, I think it absolutely is. And like you said, you know, Maryland is one big paycheck and a better hire away from having a coach that can maybe recruit the area better to give Franklin a bit of run for his money. And you start getting into that, and then Penn State's territory where it can dominate on the recruiting trail certainly is a lot smaller than it used to be. On the same side, you know, James Franklin and his staff are really good at what they do, and that's recruiting. So, you know, it's hard to say that there's anyone out there that's necessarily going to beat Franklin on the recruiting trail, but there are certainly a lot of people that can make it harder for him.
Yeah, that's been really I wasn't expecting to have so many coaching vacancies open up this early in the season and have that really kind of dominate the office conversation as opposed to this football game. But, you know, I live just down the street from Maryland's campus, and we have a couple of big Maryland grads in the SB Nation office. We've talked about that a lot, and I know this is getting away from Penn State, and we'll get back to that in a second. But I'm curious, like, is there anybody that you think that is a practical option for that position that you think, like, wow, Maryland should really get this guy, or that's somebody that would really kind of change how things are going here? We've debated about this a lot, and I'm not really willing to really consider the whole Chip Kelly thing as anything more than just like a fun hypothetical. But is there anybody to you that jumps out that, like, wow, that could potentially change things for Penn State or for the rest of this division?
I mean, that's a good question. I think I would be interested, especially after this year, to see sort of what Matt Rhule would do in a situation where he's recruiting an area that he's familiar with in a program that's in a bigger, better conference and sort of has that building behind him. Certainly, Rhule doesn't have necessarily the same track record that Chip Kelly does, but I don't know if Chip Kelly really wants to go to a place where he has to really spend more time out on the recruiting trail than he does coming up with crazy things to do on the field. So I think Rhule is sort of my haven't thought about it a whole lot, but he seems like a good choice kind of answer to that question.
Sure.
But, you know, really anyone that's familiar with that area, because I think at the end of the day, part of what's made Penn State staff successful is they sort of have a sort of more than you realize tie to the area and that kind of thing. When you can open up doors that you've had open for a long part of your coaching career, is always going to make things easier.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a relationship business. It's more than just a big board game of Risk. I wanted to go back to something that you had mentioned, because I hear this a lot on the internet, and it didn't really reflect my experience growing up near Columbus or attending Ohio State. But I guess that there does seem to be a quantifiable aversion among, I guess, either fan base to calling this a big game. Like, when I grew up, it was fine calling Penn State a rival. I mean, our brains could comprehend the idea of having Michigan and another team that was also a rival. But when I've written about this for SB Nation or on Land Grant or talked about it on Twitter, I've had both Ohio State and Penn State people push back on that concept. Is that something that reflects your experience writing about this as well? Do people not want to believe this is a really big game?
I think Penn State fans definitely think it's a big game. I mean, more so because it's sort of hard to avoid the whole fact that you're playing the number one team in the country. That sort of makes it a big game by default. But I think, I mean, it sort of has to be a rivalry to a certain extent. But I think fan bases in general don't like stooping down to a level that they're not at. And for Ohio State, when you have a program that's been so successful, and Penn State, you know, to its credit, has been a decent program over the past 10 years or so, give or take some spans in there. I think, you know, it's not hard to say that those games with Darrell Clark and those guys coming into Ohio State and then Ohio State coming here have been tough games. So there's no doubt that it's a rivalry from the standpoint of, you know, you have to go through Ohio State if you want to win the Big Ten, and Penn State's never been an easy out, so it sort of becomes a rivalry by default. But I think definitely, best that I can tell, Penn State fans see this more of a rivalry than Ohio State fans do. But admittedly, my Ohio State fan interaction comes down to a lot of the people in my mentions who, bless their little hearts, are not always necessarily sound in everything they've ever said.
We're just all having fun on Twitter.com, and sometimes, you know, you don't want to check those mentions. I'm with you. That makes sense as well. I think it's a big game. I imagine that the brain trust on Ohio State feels that way. They would not be breaking out new black uniforms and unleashing this gigantic marketing push around it if this was, you know, Indiana or a team that the, you know, Ohio State as a program isn't as emotionally invested in. Before the season, this was one that our staff had circled as potentially being a really huge game. And I think a lot of that energy has been sucked out a little bit for people who have not watched Penn State extensively, because after, you know, the loss to Temple early in the season, before we realized kind of what Temple is, and after some publicized struggles on offense, I can see that a lot of people that are not really plugged into the Big Ten might have just written off Penn State. It's like, oh, they're just really bad. Ohio State's going to roll. I admit I have not watched an entire game since then. I watched a good chunk of the Army game, and I watched chunks of the Indiana one. How much has Penn State improved since Temple?
They've definitely improved. I mean, any game where you give up 10 sacks, there's really only one direction to go. But I think without a doubt that the offensive line has come together a lot better. The receivers are doing a better and better job each week, really, just getting separation, getting open. Hackenberg looks more comfortable. The defense is as good as it was last year. I think the biggest issue for them is they've had to go through a lot of injuries. So I think this team has definitely gotten better. It hasn't quite looked as good as I think people ever thought, or as good as people thought it could. And certainly the Temple loss kind of goes into that. When you lose the Temple, it's one of those things where it wasn't so much that Penn State lost to Temple, because I think Temple's a pretty good team, but I think it was just how they did it, and Penn State just looks so dysfunctional. And you had 8 months to plan for this game, and this is the sort of execution that you get out of your team, and it makes everyone sort of scratch your head and go, what were you guys doing all of this time? And then to have the offense sort of struggle. To their credit, it has poured, absolutely poured, for three of the six games they've played this year, and certainly that's not an excuse. But at the same time, Hackenberg actually had a funny quote to a kid on one of the papers here in town. He was like, "Have you ever thrown a wet ball?" And the kid was like, "Well, no, I haven't." And he's like, "It's not fun at all." So I think there's a certain truth to all of that, and I think you see that because Penn State probably played its best game of the season against Indiana last week, and that's really, I think, what fans want to see, is at least at this point in the year, they're better than where they started. And granted, where they started was not all that great.
It looked that way. I mean, just from kind of the cursory glances I got to watch at the games and kind of peeking at the box scores, which I know doesn't always tell a complete story, but it certainly looked, from my limited vantage, it seems like the offense is becoming a little bit more functional. Do you think that those struggles before, obviously depth is still an issue at lots of places on this football team, but would you think that the primary culprit for some of these offensive struggles, was this just about depth? Was this about play calling? Was this execution from still younger players? If there's anything that you could put your finger on specifically, what do you think the issue is? Or was?
I mean, it's really all of those things. I mean, the play calling hasn't been great, but at the same time, Penn State's sort of skill set has been limited, and that comes back to depth. I think one of the things that Franklin talked about a lot this offseason and during the season is, you know, Penn State has game depth, but they've only just started to get practice depth, where you get guys on your second team and your scout team. They're going to challenge your first team in a way that's going to make people better. I mean, if you go and beat a JV high school team for 5 days a week on practice, you know, it's really not doing you any favors. And I think Penn State's gotten to the point where they have depth at practice that they're able to use and really sort of get better week to week, day to day. And I think, you know, the execution, you know, for as much as Hackenberg gets broken down play to throw, and, you know, every throw that he has to be the best one ever, there have been some drops by guys that have to catch those balls that have been good throws that just don't get caught. So that comes down to execution. It comes down to the offensive line being able to execute and get pushed. So it's a little bit of everything. And I think that's been the challenge when you try and just sort of sum it all up to people. kind of like we're doing now, is they're like, well, the sanctions are over. It's like, well, they're really not, but they're better, and their talent's better, but they're not calling great plays. But at the same time, Franklin's saying, you know, they're calling plays that they're able to execute, not so much plays that are going to really attack a defense. And you go, well, that's not particularly ideal. So it's this big hodgepodge of sort of like, whose fault is it anyway? And it's hard to really say it definitively any one thing, which really makes it just a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And certainly, when you're operating in a position where you don't have practice depth, that's going to magnify, or rather, that's going to eliminate your margin of error in so many other places. And so if you have that with suboptimal play calling or suboptimal weather conditions or, you know, any other thing, it's going to be a much bigger issue than it might be with Alabama. You know, that can pull up a four-star as the 75th guy on the roster. So that's understandable. It would make sense that that's not necessarily something that could be unpacked terribly easily. If we're operating on the assumption here that this team has improved a little bit, it does seem that the schedule is still a little bit backloaded. You got a trip to Ohio State, and the last three games are at Northwestern, Michigan, and at Michigan State. And Northwestern's defense has certainly looked better than I think it was projected here. I think the S&P Plus has Penn State finishing at 7-5. What do you think would be a reasonable expectation, given what you've seen of the team this year, for what would be a non-disappointing finish?
I mean, I would say that 7-5, I mean, when you look at the schedule, certainly makes sense. I mean, I don't think anyone's necessarily picking Penn State to win this weekend. I think I saw some Fox Sports guy picked them as Penn State as the upset this weekend, but I will be the last person to say that I think that's actually going to happen. I think that Penn State can beat Maryland and Illinois. Northwestern at the end of the year is always sort of an odd anomaly, but at the same time, Penn State's struggled at Northwestern with good teams, so somewhat inexplicably. I don't know if it's because they don't cut the grass or whatever it is exactly.
It's a high school stadium, man.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I think, as a side note, I remember watching whatever it was 2 years ago when Ohio State was at Northwestern, and they like hadn't cut the grass for like a month, and it looked like everyone was running through a field. So it was. I enjoy that, but you know, that's a sort of up in the air game. If they can win that game, then you've got those eight wins there. And Michigan is sort of an odd dynamic because Christian Hackenberg, through all of this, regardless of the team that he's had behind him, has played exceptionally well in the last few games of every season. I think it's one of those things, especially if that's his last game at home. If Hack knows that he's going to go pro, that's the last time that he's ever going to play in Beaver Stadium is against Michigan. And, you know, those senior day or not quite senior day things always play into the equation a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, for as good as Michigan has looked, it might not matter how much you'd like to win if they just steamroll you. And obviously Michigan State, after the end of the year, depending on where they're sitting, that's never going to be an easy game. So I would say seven wins certainly makes sense. I think they can probably steal one of those last three, be it Northwestern or Michigan. But, you know, 7-5 is probably the safe bet, if for no other reason than everybody they're playing is probably better than them.
Okay. I'm interested that you said that you kind of went out of your way there to say that you're not picking Penn State to spring the upset here. Like I've seen the line kind of vary between like 15 and 21. Like I think 17 is kind of where it's settling here. That feels really high to me. The S&P, which it might be a little bit wonky right now, I think has this as like a Ohio State by like a little bit over three. Like their profiles are really pretty similar here. I don't know if I've seen anything from Ohio State this season that makes me feel confident that they're going to beat anybody by two touchdowns, let alone a team that has as good a defense. If you don't see Penn State winning, how close do you think this game will be, and how do you see it kind of playing out?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, or at least it's the budget that I have on the hotel this weekend's good-dollar question.
the sports writer Marriott question.
Yeah, exactly. I think this game can be close for a while. I mean, I think Penn State's defense can probably hang with just about anyone in the country within reason. I think it's that good. But the question is really, can they move the ball? Can Penn State move the ball on the offense? It has all the parts, and that's the thing that's sort of been confusing about this team to watch, is it's not for a lack of actual talent on the field when the offense takes the field. It's just never really clicked. And I mean, sure, they've won five straight games, but they played five straight games at home against a bunch of teams they probably should have beat anyway. So that's not really doesn't really say much. I think it's one of those games where Penn State keeps it close in the first half, but can't score enough that the eventual Ohio State touchdowns make it that 14 or 21 point game. I think you really can't beat the number one team in the nation on the road if your defense is on the field for most of the game. And if your offense can't score in response, I think what you've seen from Ohio State all year is a team that, you know, maybe it's close for the first half, but they wear you down. And eventually they get those late second half scores that sort of blow things open. And I think that's what made the Indiana game interesting, was the fact that Indiana was able to score a couple times against Ohio State to kind of keep that game close. And I don't know if Penn State has that firepower to sort of answer some of those late scores. Maybe if they get Barkley back, I certainly hope they do, just because I want to see him play. He's very good. And I think, you know, if they get him, they have a shot. But I have a hard time seeing, you know, to answer your question, I don't think Ohio State will blow Penn State out of the water from a start-to-finish perspective, but I think by the time the game is over, you have a kind of blowout score.
Okay. That would resemble, I think, what happened with Maryland, and that was a tied game early in the third quarter before the wheels kind of fell off. The interesting thing here, you know, just for me from watching Ohio State, is I feel like they've had an opportunity over the last four games to really kind of put their foot on the neck on a couple of teams and really just put them away, and that's usually when the turnover happens, or some kind of like flagrantly missed execution thing. The Maryland game, Ohio State's about to kick a field goal to go up 17 right before halftime. They miss a makeable kick, and there's a broken play, and suddenly it's a 7-point game, and it's immediately tied. For Indiana, Ohio State had a couple of chances to go up 2-3 scores and then turn the football over, gave Indiana advantageous positions. This was the case for Northern Illinois. Was just begging Ohio State to win by 20, and Ohio State refused. So I look at this and think, well, this is a team that's good enough that if you spot them the ball at the 41-yard line, they can scrape together enough to get some points. But if they don't do that, and they didn't against Maryland, at least turning the ball over, your prediction here seems certainly pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to need help. I mean, Penn State's going to need help. It's not going to go out there and outbox Ohio State, so to speak. I think, you know, kind of like you said, I've only seen bits and pieces of Ohio State at times, because people are like, you should get into sports writing because you love football. But then I've probably watched less football since I started doing this job than like I ever did before I was actually employed. So everything they tell you is a lie, unless you've got a lot of TVs. But yeah, I think you're spot on there.
That's an important thing. Like, I probably go to games with the credential three or four times a year, and when that happens, I'm watching one football game, maybe the crazy drunk Pac-12 game at night, just because you're working the entire time. And if I'm doing SB Nation stuff and I can sit in our office and we have four TVs, you know, I can see a little bit more. But it's a different thing, you know. And the unpopular take of occasionally wanting to defend the AP poll, just because it's mostly beat writers who are on there. And, you know, you can't blame them. They're just, the window you get is so small, especially if it's a 3:30 kick and you're there. That really is kind of your world for the day.
Yeah, I love noon kicks because I can get home in time for whatever the big game of the night is. I love trying to – I know it's an unpopular opinion for some people, but I love watching Michigan State play. I just think they're a fun, sort of grinded out, fun defensive, good offensive team to watch. So I appreciate the noon kicks. I'm all for noon kicks all season, because then I can watch football.
Yeah, as a professional, I enjoy them as well. I understand why athletic departments are not crazy about them. It's hard to get students to show up. And, you know, even though kind of crowd shaming is, I think, kind of jumped the shark a little bit, it is a thing that will happen on Twitter every time there's a game and people want to avoid those cosmetics. But I prefer the 3:30 or even better, like for me, the 8:00, because my kid will probably be asleep. I can go somewhere else and I don't have to worry about that. But nobody should make decisions for me, because nobody cares if I'm complaining. This is not really a job. It's work, but I mean, it's not really work. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, we get fed and paid to watch sports. So like, I'm not gonna complain too much. So.
No. I've, you know. Throw me into the mines next time I actually seriously complain. I guess the only other thing I want to ask you about then is the you kind of alluded to this, the injury situation. I know that Penn State's dealing with a couple of injuries here at running back. Is there anywhere else where they are especially beat up and may not be at full strength coming into this game?
That is the biggest area. I mean, there's some ongoing long term. You know, Penn State doesn't have Naeem Wortman-White you lose your starting middle linebacker in week one in the first half. I actually feel really bad for him, too, because he's a Philadelphia native who talked about, like, growing up, looking out the window and seeing Lincoln Financial Field. He goes out and gets hurt playing, you know, sort of in his dream stadium in the first half. So they, you feel for him, but he hasn't been around since week one. But really, the spotlight from an injury perspective is on Saquon Barkley. He's a guy that, if there's anything that it's a shame that no one watches Penn State for, before he got hurt with whatever exactly it is that's wrong with his ankle or foot or leg, Penn State will never tell anyone what's wrong with anyone unless their limbs actually fall off, and then it'll just be an upper body. But if he gets back, if Akil Lynch gets back, Penn State has an opportunity to make some plays, and that's really the only area that Penn State's hurt at this point. But to their credit, they're running the ball efficiently with their third and fourth reserve backs, who, you know, maybe in a couple of years would be 1 and 2 anyway.
Yeah, Ohio State's defense has been a little bit vulnerable with explosive plays, and the last couple of weeks, explosive plays on the ground. The biggest thing seems to have been with mobile quarterbacks, and I would be a little bit surprised if I see Hackenberg, you know, drop a 55-yard scramble. But being able to run efficiently could really open up some opportunities elsewhere here, because I'm not sure that I love the matchup for Penn State with Ohio State's secondary, providing they're not hurt, and Ohio State's pass rush against what Penn State has without some help from that running game. I think that will just about do it here for us. Is there other than this football game, since this is later in the evening, are there any other games this week that you are interested in as a fan of college football?
I mean, Michigan State, I think, is a game, obviously, that everyone is sort of curious how that goes. I'd love to be a fly on Michigan State's locker room wall this week, because I'd love to know. I got to think that D'Antonio really just wants to beat the hell out of Michigan. I mean, I don't think anyone thinks that's going to happen, especially with the defense that Michigan's put out on the field the past few weeks. But that's probably the biggest one. I'm sure the SEC is doing something cool. I'll watch whatever Arkansas is doing, because I want to see some more coach flopping. But, I mean, I never thought college football would have such a great heel as Burt. I mean, maybe Spurrier, but he has been a fantastic national treasure of a human being. So I will watch Michigan State, and then I'll try and find Arkansas to see what sort of shenanigans they pull off this week.
Yeah, I really did not fully appreciate Burt when he was in Big Ten country. Like, I as an Ohio State fan, I could not stand him, and I have some ties to Wisconsin, and I knew people that kind of worked around him, and that just kind of fueled my visceral distaste. And then now I just praying for a world where he ends up at Iowa. Because there's nobody that's as delectably and like perfectly hateable, and he leans into it, and I've kind of come full circle, and now like I will miss him when he's gone. I hope he coaches for another 30 years, and I hope it's for places that I have some kind of either reporting or emotional attachment to, because he's just delightfully fun to root against.
Yeah, I love the whole going to the Big Ten tournament, dropping 500 points. And then just walking out the door is just like, like, that's a guy who knew he was leaving and was like, whatever, let's just score every possible touchdown and then I'm out of here. Like, it really endeared him to me a lot.
Yeah. The flop thing just adds to his legend. I'm looking forward to seeing what other recipes that he tweets or after they get dump trucked a couple of the games this year. And I'm very interested in Michigan State too. On paper, it seems like, especially the way that Michigan's playing, as hard as it might be for me to say this, it seems like that they should be able to win relatively comfortably. But the kind of if there's anybody who's able to find a way to build up more chips on shoulders and to play up any disrespect, that it's D'Antonio. For Michigan State, any slights, both real and imagined, gets magnified there. And if there's any game this year where they're going to play absolutely out of their minds, I think it'll be this one. So it should be compelling television for this week after maybe a little bit of a slower previous week.
Yeah, I've always wondered, just as I know we're wandering off down the wrong road, but I've always wondered if it matters that Michigan State recruits not as high profile recruits in a lot of regards. I broke down once Penn State's recruiting compared to some of the other Big Ten schools. Michigan State really does a lot of successful things with those three-star unranked guys, and I've always wondered if you can build a chip on those guys easier than a team full of Hackenbergs. But that is a think piece for another day, I'm sure.
It's funny you mention that. We can kind of wrap up on this because I'm fascinated by it. Like, I remember Matt Hinton wrote something for us before he went to Grantland a little while ago that really documented this very linear relationship between average recruiting ranking as a team and success. Like, it's not just that teams with elite recruits tend to win championships and everything, but teams with 3 stars tend to beat teams with 2 stars, and teams with 3 stars tend to lose games to 4 stars. And he was like, but there were 2 teams that really bucked that trend, and despite having lower ranked teams in general, tended to still have success against other squads that did better than they did. Because, like, we know Boise State will run up these gaudy win-loss records, but, you know, most of their schedule is playing against, like, New Mexico State Tech. And one of them is Bill Snyder, who I think is universally regarded as a wizard, and taking some 400-pound, you know, walk-on offensive tackle and turning him into a wide receiver. And the other one was Michigan State. And since then, Michigan State's actually been able to pick up a couple other blue chip kids. They've beaten Ohio State for a few people. They're probably going to flip George Hill, and they're going to have like 2 really good running backs in the future. And they've been able to beat teams with a lot better talent. And some of that, I'm sure, is because Michigan's coaching hasn't been very good. But I'm fascinated because I'm not sure exactly how that works and how he's, like, him specifically has been able to buck that trend. I don't know if it's the culture of we've been disrespected. I don't know if it was some kind of Narduzzi wizardry. I don't know if it's sustainable, but it is a cool story, and I'd love to know more about it.
If you write it, I will read it.
Well, I will probably bug a couple of folks who are smarter than I am. This might be a Bill Connolly story or something like that for us to kind of untangle in June. Ben, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us. Real quick, where can the good people who are listening to the show find you and your work on the internets?
I write for the great site of statecollege.com, and if you want to follow me on Twitter...
want to follow Ben on
you
Twitter,
do.
By the way.
Yeah, you absolutely want to follow me on Twitter. That's Ben Jones, or Ben_Jones88. You'd think I would know what my own Twitter handle is. Ben_Jones88, and I will just enlighten your day from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to sleep.
There will be important transactional Penn State news, football takes, and FIFA information all on that Twitter feed. Luke's been telling me that you guys have been playing here. He's been trying to get me to get into the game, but I don't want to do it because, like, I don't really follow soccer that much, and given how seriously he takes it, I'm just going to get my ass whooped for, like, 3 years in a row.
Oh, that's all he does to me. Don't let him tell you that we play. I tag along and drive the car, and then I end up losing 5-4.
Listeners, if you are good at FIFA, by all means, please go find Luke Zimmerman and challenge him to match, and then just beat the ever living crap out of him, because he needs to be humbled and his reign of terror taken down. Ben, thank you again. This has been the Hangout in the Holy Land. We are at Land Grant. Holyland.com. We're on Land Grant 33. We are on Facebook, everything else. You can also find the show on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and go Bucks.